Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, China punishes Marriott, and we tell you which airlines are listening when you write them on Twitter.
Chris Elliott is one of the country's leading consumer advocates, and he's operating a website that you'll love. When you have a consumer problem, he can help you solve it. At 3:20, we're joined by Chris Elliott. We're going to talk about travel on the road in the year ahead.
At 3:35, we take you across the Pacific Ocean to Japan. Reporter Chris Galloway joins us to talk about travel to Japan and to tell you about how you can visit him with him. Join him on a visit to the land of the rising sun.
Then at 3:45, we take you across the other ocean, the Atlantic, where reporter Scott Angeletti is waiting to tell us about Iceland, the land of fire and ice. Two great international destinations in focus.
If this is your first time, welcome. If you're a regular listener, thank you. The announcers who can actually do the headlines professionally will be here in just a moment. Nice to have you along for your for the latest edition of the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
To Alaska, go north, the rush is on.
Yes, my friends, it's another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys here on KFBK, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, your hosts. Mark, you know, if we didn't practice the headlines ahead of time so that we could get it right, you know, we'd probably get it right. But then again, see, if we did get it right, you know, like perfect, then people would think it was recorded or something.
People wouldn't know that we actually practiced the headlines only minutes before the show goes on the air, and then we couldn't say them for whatever reason. But, you know, that happens, I suppose. It's, you know, like I said, the professional radio guys will be here soon.
Look, I have to ask you, I know you spend some time in the islands in Hawaii, and it's one of your favorite destinations. Yesterday, when the false alarm thing went off that most everybody knows about by now, did you stop and think of what your response would have been had you been on the islands at the time?
I did, and I called a couple of folks over there yesterday afternoon and talked to them about it, and the reactions went from a friend of mine on Kauai who said, didn't hear about it till it was all over. He said, if the bomb had come, why then it would have ended. If it was the end times, why it would have ended times, and I would have never known what happened. Another lady who was on Maui, who works at the Royal Lahaina Hotel on Maui, she said that it was immediate, almost panic, and because people didn't know where to go, and this is a kind of a good thing, I guess, because it shows that visitors, there was no real organization, there was no plan. Of course, this was all an accident. Imagine being laying on a beach and, you know, your cell phone goes off and you pick it up and it says we're under attack. I guess this is the times that you live in, but I really feel for the residents, but especially for the tourists who were there, and it does point out something, that when you're traveling someplace, it might be a good idea to have a plan B in the back of your mind, you know, because people in Hawaii yesterday kind of sort of almost needed one. I don't know, Tom. I guess it's the times that we live in, and I'm trying not to say anything too politically incorrect.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, there will be some fallout, and not all of it will necessarily be bad. Some of it will be, you know, like you say, a bit of a wake up call. Well, we are the Travel Guys here every Sunday from 3 to 4. You can follow along at travelguysradio.com. Got a great show ahead. And at the beginning of every Travel Guys radio show, we do the travel news. Mark, what you got for us?
Well, let's see here. First of all, speaking of international incidents, Marriott made a pretty big mistake on their website. They they sent out a Mandarin language questionnaire a couple weeks ago that listed Tibet, Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwan as separate countries. China views all of those people, all of those places as being, it's a one country policy China has. So they don't view those places as being different countries. Those are all part of China. So Marriott really made a faux pas, and the Chinese temporarily closed down the Marriott website in China. They are being punished for the next week because they didn't respect Chinese sovereignty. And Delta Airlines is now in trouble for doing something fairly similar. So I'm going to suggest to these great big corporations that maybe perhaps they should handle, should hire some foreign language and cultural experts, because it would be a lot cheaper than the amount of business that they lost on the Chinese
website. Or maybe, or just to check a map.
Exactly. Or something like that. Airlines that actually listen when you complain on Twitter. This is really kind of interesting. If you have a problem or a situation, some airlines are more prone to answer you on Twitter than others. Does it surprise anyone that Southwest and JetBlue are the two that tend to reply the best? Mm-hmm. And those are the two.
Are you a Twitterer?
I am not.
Do you tweet?
I do not. However, after reading this... I kind of think that maybe I should reconsider.
Yeah, me as well. And finally join the 2018s here.
Yeah,
we won't be able to keep track of what the president's saying.
Well, if you have something that you need them to respond to and you're not getting a response, JetBlue and Southwest generally respond oftentimes within 10 minutes, this says. So if you had an issue and you couldn't get them to respond, and heaven forbid there are a lot of people like that, you could give that a shot. All of the airlines have Twitter accounts. Some respond better than others. Air Canada got dinged as being the one that was the least responsive. Most of the others are in the middle. Most of the airlines respond to Twitter requests within 24 hours. So, it's something to file away there. If you're a tweeter, why then you can do that. I mentioned a couple of months ago, Tom, on this program about how I predicted that Sacramento might be in the loop to get some more international air service. And indeed, it appears to be that way. An article in the Sacramento Bee last week confirms that John Wheat, the director out at our airport, is waiving incentives in front of some of the international carriers, like Norwegian Air and some of the ones that are serving some secondary cities. This is very common for cities like ours that are looking for new service. We already subsidize some new service that Southwest put in last year and some that United put in, that overnight flight to Newark that gives us a choice on opportunities to go to New York City. What happens is a city will help guarantee marketing expenses or get rid of landing fees or something like that for a designated period of time in order to incentivize an airline to bring new service. So apparently this is what they're waving in front of some of the European carriers, is please consider Sacramento as a place that, Kansas City now has service to Iceland. And you say, well, Iceland, what good would that do Sacramento? Well, because, for example, Iceland Air, which flies to Iceland, then flies to about three dozen European destinations. So it's a connecting point, and a wonderful connecting point at that. You'll find out later in the program, Iceland is a pretty cool place to visit. But anyways, if Sacramento is able to land one of these folks, why, we might have Norwegian Air, of course, would be perhaps a connection somewhere in Norway. Or they have a couple of other hubs in Europe. So it's a possibility of Sacramento. We're on the up and up now. The air service in Sacramento is definitely rising. The travel industry is launching a coalition in response to a drop in international visits. Last year was the worst year for inbound international travelers since 2009. 3.3 less, fewer visitors spent a total of $4.6 billion less in dollars in the United States. Interesting to note that tourism is one of the United States' greatest balance of trade items. So as we've mentioned here before, folks spend a lot more money here than we spend there. And so that provides us with positive cash flow. When fewer people come to the United States, and when they spend less money when they get here, then that means not as much positive cash flow for U.S. businesses. So that's why that is important in all of the turmoil and perhaps a little bit of a mixed message in terms of whether or not the United States is welcome and open for business is costing us in terms of international arrivals. Okay, a couple things I want to mention to you quickly here before we wrap up the travel news. Hilton is improving its Hilton Honors program. It says there have been a lot of changes. I strongly encourage you, if you are a Hilton Honors person, either log on to your Hilton account or you can go to travelguysradio.com. You can see under the show highlights there a listing, a link that will give you all the details on how Hilton Honors is changing, but it is changing pretty dramatically. And when your frequent flyer or frequent guest program starts giving away a lot of points, which Hilton is doing, it means probably that a downgrade is coming soon, a devaluation, which has happened a couple times with Hilton in the last half dozen years. So that's something that you want to watch for if you're a Hilton person. Remember, we always suggest that if you belong to frequent flyer guest programs, that you spend those miles and those points as often as you can, because they don't ever, nobody ever announces that their miles or points are gaining in value. And that wraps up your travel news for today. When we come back, Chris Elliott is going to join us here on the Travel Guys. Chris is going to talk a little bit about what might be in store for travelers in this deregulation environment that we're seeing now in the year ahead. Good for travelers, bad for travelers. Chris Elliott joins us here on the Travel Guys coming up next.
Oh, it's a crazy world. I don't know about you, but I am running low on things I can trust. KFBK is the place I go to find out what's going on. No speculation, just the facts.
For news without the noise, depend on News Radio KFBK, 93.1 FM at 1530 AM.
Welcome, you've got the Travel Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you on another fabulous Sunday. And one of, no doubt, our favorite guests, nothing against all the other great guests we have, but Christopher Elliott, who comes to us on a pretty regular basis, nationally known consumer advocate, is returning for our first visit for 2018. Good afternoon, Chris.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, welcome back to the Travel Guys. Chris, you are plodding into a new year here, and I read on your website that the number of people requesting advocacy has gone up fairly dramatically on a year-over-year basis. Is that true?
It is, yes. And I think there's just a lot more need out there for people to get help. Companies are maybe not doing what they used to do, or that maybe they're feeling empowered now that we have a more deregulatory environment. But you know, they need help. I'm here for them. I have volunteers that I work with, great volunteers, and so I'm happy to do it.
How, Chris, before we get into the nuts and bolts of things here, how do you fund all of this advocacy? I mean, these people who work under you and help people solve problems, and the website, and you must occasionally have a lawyer who sends you a letter or two and says, hey, we don't like what you said. I mean, who pays for all of that stuff?
Well, for the first, I've been doing this for about 20 years, and for the first 15 years, it was all self-funded. I had, you know, whatever money I earned from journalism, I would funnel it into the website. And so if I got sued, which I did, or if I got hit with a cease and desist letter, which I do all the time, or if I have any server expenses, I would just pay for them myself. I'm very lucky. I have people that I work with now. I have supporters. So I have fundraisers twice a year. In fact, I'm in the middle of one right now. And so if you are hearing this and you're interested in supporting consumer advocacy, you can go to my website. It's elliott.org, ELLIOTT.org. And if you do elliott.org/support, you can find more information about becoming an underwriter. But I rely on people, on readers. If I've helped you in any way, and sometimes I'll say afterwards, look, if you've benefited from anything on the site, please consider making a donation. But I also have companies that want to be associated with the advocacy because they stand for good customer service too. There are a few out there, and they're all listed on my website, and they help too.
Excellent, excellent. Well, and Elliott.org, not only is there the opportunity there to support consumer advocacy, there's a lot of advocacy going on that site on a daily basis, 24/7, 365. So if you have an issue,
that's a place to go. You can find some help there. There's some great listings of folks to contact and stuff like that. All right, enough of that. Let's shift gears here. Chris, you've recently opined about how things might be different for travelers in 2018 than they were in 2017. You mentioned the deregulatory environment, which might not be real consumer friendly. Tell us a little bit about what you see on the horizon for this year for airline passengers in particular.
Well, for travelers and in general for consumers, it was not a very good year. We had a lot of things happen that were not in our favor. A lot of regulations that protected consumers were undone by the at a federal level by the administration, but also at the state level. And so that's a lot of causing a lot of concern and creating a lot of new cases for me and for my team. But when it comes to airlines, I'm especially worried, and the reason why is that the Department of Transportation, and remember, they have the authority to regulate airlines. It's not regulated at the state level. They have actually sent kind of a memo out to all the airlines saying, hey, are there any regulations you'd like us to get rid of? Honestly, that's what they've done. So now the airlines have come back and they said, oh, yeah, well, we don't like, for example, the 24-hour rule. And that 24-hour rule says that if you make an airline reservation and you have second thoughts, your plans change, you can always get your money back within 24 hours. And then, there are some full fare disclosure laws too, which are very common sense, and every business should be doing this. It basically says the price that you quote me is the price that I should pay. So none of this quoting a $99 fare, and then you get to the end of the booking process, and you add all these fees and taxes, and it's $140. That's not allowed. The airlines want to get rid of that because they want everyone to think that their fares are cheaper than they actually are. And I think that's an unfair and deceptive practice. But the government wants to get rid of these things. So people are really, really worried that this is going to be the year of the airline instead of the year of the consumer. And I'm trying to stop that.
Well, you know, it seems to me that we've always been kind of hoping that the government would back the consumer, but I guess that in the past, at times it's been more so. But does it seem to you, Chris, that right now a political climate that's not the case?
Yeah, these are not the best of times, and politically, I mean, we have a midterm election coming up, and that might change the dynamic a little bit. I certainly hope so, but this is not even a political issue. You know, the airline industry has it wrong. They say what's good for the airline industry is good for consumers. It's actually the other way around. What's good for consumers is good for the airline. So having strong consumer protections builds trust in the airline industry, makes people more comfortable about their purchases, makes them more likely to buy an airline ticket, and benefits the airline industry. It's not the other way around. So getting rid of these regulations and these consumer protections is not going to help the airlines. It's actually going to hurt consumers, and that in turn is going to hurt the airline.
Chris, last spring we talk about transparency. We got very transparent one night when a dentist got drugged off an airplane in Chicago, a United Airlines Express flight. And that has changed. The numbers of people who are getting involuntarily bumped off of airplanes has changed fairly dramatically. United has really changed their policy about overbookings and stuff. Talk about that a little bit. Was that a good thing for consumers? It wasn't a good thing for Dr. Dow. Well, I guess he got a few bucks out of it, so maybe he did come out okay at the end of the day. But is more of that sort of thing, is that good for consumers, or is that not so good?
Yeah, Dr. Dow did pretty okay, I think, for considering he got a couple of broken teeth. He walked away with a little bit of money from United Airlines. I actually was invited to speak at an airline conference in San Diego this last fall, and I had a chance to, in a very public live setting, confront United Airlines about what had happened. And it actually was a very productive face-off, if you will. They were very open and transparent. They talked about what had gone wrong and what they wanted to do to fix it. And I think that they have actually done a lot of good things. I had a customer service award that I do every year. It's a Reader's Choice Award. And one of the categories that we had was Best Customer Service Recovery. And United Airlines won that. So they've done a lot of good things, and my hat's off to them. But just changing your involuntary denied boarding practices is putting a Band-Aid on a much bigger problem. And that bigger problem is, what are we going to do about customer service? You've got all these ridiculous rules. You've got people who really passionately hate the airlines for you know, putting all these restrictions on their tickets and, in some cases, pocketing their money without giving them anything for it. They're really upset. And also, the you know, you get what you pay for service back in economy class of a transcontinental flight. And, you know, you ask a flight attendant for something to drink, and they give you the snarl and say, I'll be with you, and they never show up. That's the bigger problem. And that's something the airline industry is very, still very defensive about. They say, look, if you want low fares, this is what you're going to get. And I beg to differ. I think you can give good service and low fares as well. You can have a win-win. The airline industry still thinks it's not possible. That's the problem, not involuntary deny boarding.
We're talking with Chris Elliott, our favorite consumer advocate. Before I let you go, one last question. Is there anything positive on the horizon for travelers that you can think of for 2018?
What we are seeing is this rise of the advocacy, the self-advocating customer. I've seen this more and more. You know, people are backed into a corner. The regulations are being dismantled. All the rules say that they have no options anymore, basically, when they're flying. It is not even a free market anymore, because you have, you know, three or four airlines that have a dominant 80% market share. So you really don't even have a choice if you want to fly somewhere. Oftentimes people just say, I'm going to take the car, and that's going to be it. But what we are seeing is people taking matters into their own hands. They're reaching out to customer service executives on their own. They're advocating their own cases. They're taking their cell phones on the planes. And when something goes wrong, they do not hesitate to take those cell phones out and to start taking pictures or video and then posting them online. And I think that this kind of empowerment is really good. If you're a flight attendant and you're doing your job, you have nothing to be afraid of when someone turns their cell phone on and starts taping you. But if you're doing something wrong, if you're delivering, like I said, you get what you pay for attitude to these passengers, then maybe you should be afraid and that somehow you're going to end up on YouTube, become a viral star. So I think that actually is the silver lining here.
Our guest, Christopher Elliott, consumer advocate. You can is Christopher still in the B? I don't read the B.
Every Sunday.
I am.
Yep.
All right.
He is still in the B. We're down to one page travel section in the B, but Christopher is on it every Sunday.
There you go. And you can find Christopher at Elliott.org. And maybe he can help you, or maybe you can help him. It goes both ways. Christopher, thank you so much for spending some time with the Travel Guys, and Happy New Year to you too, sir.
Thank you very much.
When we come back after the news, we're going to take you on an international journey across two oceans. First, we're going to Japan, and next we're going to Iceland, and then we're going to talk a little bit about some TSA-friendly snacks. What are good things that you can bring for kids on board the plane? And we also have a great tribute to Martin Luther King before we sign off today. We are the Travel Guys. We'll be right back with the second half of the show right after the news. Welcome back to the Travel Guys on KFBK. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano here. A couple of reminders. You can find links to everything that we talk about today in the travel news, and including a video about why tomato juice tastes better at 37,000 feet. I kid you not, there is a link right on the website. You can click right on it. TravelGuysRadio.com will tell you why tomato juice tastes better at 37,000 feet. And as a tomato juice drinker only at 37,000 feet, I think I kind of agree with what they're saying there. If you don't get to listen to all of our programs live, you can listen to our podcasts. If you go to travelguysradio.com, there's a place there where you can sign up for the podcast very easily. And you can also send us a question if you have a travel question. We answer some of them on the air from time to time, and I try to answer as many of them personally as we can. So now it's time to take off on an adventure across a couple of really exciting places.
Well, we're going to take folks across an ocean here now, not only to tell them a little bit about someplace that Sports Leisure Vacations goes, but also to tell you about two exotic destinations that are places that might be on some folks' bucket list out there who are listening. So we have some information to hopefully get you even a little bit more excited about going to Japan first and then Iceland. So two very different destinations. Joining me is Chris Galloway from Sports Leisure Vacations. Chris is also one of our road reporters here at the Travel Guys. Chris, you've been to Japan a number of times. Tell us, what are some of the things that really make Japan attractive to a traveler like yourself?
I have probably spent about a year of my life total in Japan on separate trips. Japan is just such a dichotomy of modern and the antiquity. You know, you've got mega cities, and within those mega cities, you've got sacred sites or, you know, temples that have been around for 700, 800 years. It's just such an eclectic mix. It's something that just keeps me coming back time after time.
What about the people, the food? Japan has, we understand, has an aging population. I'm not sure exactly what that means or how that impacts tourism, but it's talk a little bit about the people in Japan, the culinary aspects.
Well, talking about the aging population, one of the things that I love about the culture there, and I'm not necessarily talking about the arts and that sort of thing, I'm talking about the day-to-day culture. There is a very healthy respect for the elders in Japan. There's also something that is, it permeates Japanese life, and that is mindfulness. As a matter of fact, if you tune into or check out the Travel Guys website, we're going to have a video on there that sort of explains this concept. But you see this, say for example, on a subway. An older person gets in, and the young people immediately get up and offer those seats. It's kind of the way we used to be, mm-hmm. and we've lost sight of that a bit. So that's something that's just really unique. There's a lot of respect, and again, just that mindfulness of others. Now, you mentioned food, and you know I'm a foodie.
Yep.
Okay, so Anthony Bourdain, celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain, he declares Tokyo to be the absolute food capital of the world. It's very, very exciting there. They've got tons of Michelin star-rated restaurants. You've got all different types of food, not just Japanese food. But if you want to talk about Japanese food, what's really interesting about that is it's all about the quality. It's about the flavor. It's about the presentation, the aesthetics of it. So not only are you eating the food and tasting the food, you're enjoying it with your eyes, and you know the tradition and the work that has gone into creating this meal for you.
Japan's in our same hemisphere. What's a good time to visit?
You want to go during the spring and the fall. Of course, March, late March, that's when you get the Cherry Blossom Festival. That's a very, very popular time to go. Prices are going to be pretty astronomical at that time. But pretty much from March until about the end of May, you're pretty good. And then the summertime is going to be very hot and humid, quite a bit of rain. And then, of course, it dries again during the fall. Winters, of course, are cold and can be quite rainy as well. So your spring and your fall are going to be the best times. And that's actually when we're going to be there. We're going to be there May 12th through the 23rd.
Christopher, you were talking a moment ago about the food. And would you say that Japan is probably, you know, here in the States, everything is about from farm to fork. And would you say that Japan, they were kind of ahead of all of the United States in regards to freshness and, you know, farm to fork dining?
Absolutely. The quality of ingredients is key there. You know, a lot of their land is inhabitable. Only about 17% of the land in Japan is habitable. And that's due mostly because, you know, it's very mountainous, volcanoes, that sort of thing. And so they have had to find very ingenious ways of growing their own food. You know, you've got mushroom farms that are indoors and that sort of thing. So they're actually putting out a lot of the produce that they use is created themselves within their country using very state-of-the-art techniques.
Chris, you dropped a hint there just a moment ago. I think I picked up that you are going to Japan with a group. I know you're taking a group of about 30 people there in the spring. You still have a very, very few seats available.
Four seats available.
Somebody who might want to go with you with this group. Tell us a little bit about your travels. I can see from the itinerary that you have there, I can see a lot of train tracks on that itinerary, so it looks like you're going to be doing some of your travel in Japan by train.
Absolutely. That's one of the best ways to travel in Japan, on the bullet train. So yes, we will be using those to move between the major cities. This trip is a really nice mix of big city, rural countryside. You're going to get some nature. We're going to be in Hakone, which is over near Mount Fuji, the hot springs, that sort of thing. We'll be staying in a traditional ryokan-style hotel.
So people are going to get some real Japanese experiences if they travel.
Oh, absolutely.
because you're an experienced Japanese traveler, and you're not going to take them to the tourist spot in town.
We'll hit some of the tourist spots, but then also, because I have been there so many times, you know, I'm going to make sure that you try the street food that maybe you haven't had before, or you go down that little back alley and find that hidden gem.
Well, I think those are the reasons that people travel to foreign countries, and a lot of times people who go to countries outside of the U.S., they're only going there, they might only go once. So their entire impression of that country, their entire experience from that country is going to be built on just a few days. You're spending about 10 days in Japan minus your travel time back and forth. Is that enough time for people to really get a feel for the country?
I do think that's enough time. We actually spread this trip out just a little bit longer than what it was intended to be to allow enough time. So again, big cities, rural countryside, you're going to get the full sensation.
What if I were going to ask you the one major reason that somebody should go to Japan, if not with you, then on their own, if somebody's a world traveler and they haven't been there yet, what would be the one thing that really stands out about Japan? Its people, its culture.
It's people, it's culture, it's food. You can't pick just one thing. It's a small country, but it's so dynamic. There's just so much going on there. But knowing me, if you had to ask me, I'd say the food.
Ah, okay. All right. Chris Galloway from Sports Leisure Vacations talking to us a little bit about Japan. You can go to travelguysradio.com. Chris has posted not only a link to his tour, but we've listed a link to Japanese tourism. And also Chris has got a little bit of a video on there that you might enjoy watching. Travelguysradio.com. Tom, when we come back, we're going to take folks. We went on to the Pacific Ocean. When we come back, we're going to the Atlantic Ocean. We're going to take you to Iceland right here on the Travel Guys.
We're back. Thanks for being with us. We are the Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano here on KFBK. As always, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And you can travel along with us at travelguysradio.com. Links to all that we talk about, and particularly the next subject. One of my favorite places, that, of course, being Iceland, because I like lots of ice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
You
that's
think
not...
there's a lot of ice in Iceland?
Yeah, well, sure. Isn't that why they call it Iceland? I would rather go to that place called Greenland. Scott can clarify that, right?
Scott Angeletti from Sports Leisure Vacations, one of our road reporters. About Iceland, Scott, clarify that for us. Iceland is all green and Greenland is all ice, or tell me about that.
Correct, Mark. Yes, it's actually that's true. It's totally the opposite. And thank you for having me. Nice to see you, Tom, Mark.
So Iceland is all green.
And Greenland is all ice.
And Greenland is all ice. So that's why you want to go to Iceland. Scott, you've been to Iceland before. You're going back this summer. You get really tingly when you start talking about Iceland. So I know it's a place that you like. Scads of people are flooding to Iceland. In fact, too many people almost are going to Iceland. Tell us about what are the reasons. What makes Iceland such an attractive destination?
Well, I think it just has such an incredible landscape. It's so diverse. When you land in Keflavik Airport, you drive right through a volcanic field. So it's all black lava. It looks like you're on the moon. Then you'll end up in 45 minutes later in Reykjavik, which is a very metropolis city. Pretty much the whole population of Iceland lives in that city. The whole metro area the country has about 330,000 people, and about a little over 200 live in the metropolitan
area. And to give people an idea, the population of Sacramento, the city of Sacramento, is about 500,000. So that means there's only about two-thirds as many people on the whole island as there is in the city. And, of course, our city, the metro area here, is about 1.5 million. So Iceland is really not all – there aren't that many people. It isn't that big. The geological features in the natural part of Iceland, talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So you have you have lava fields, and you'll have bubbling mud and geysers and all that. But you also have mountains that are all lava. They're all green with just dozens of waterfalls falling down on the side of the road as you're driving by. A lot of these waterfalls you can go up to and walk behind them and walk up. There's trails all around.
What's the language in Iceland?
It's Icelandic, but the population, especially all the tourist areas, they speak English very well, so there's not really a problem communicating.
How interesting. Icelandic.
Scott, do you speak any Icelandic? And how is that for for the people that travel with you? Is it important for them to know a little bit of the language, or are they pretty good at, like a lot of countries, just speaking English?
Yeah, just speaking English. The language is really, really hard, especially for myself to pronounce. Yeah, it's really, really hard.
That's well.
Scott, how long, it's an island nation. If I were planning a trip to Iceland and I wasn't going with you, how long would you tell me to stay on the island?
You know, I think you need at least 10 days or so to circle the whole island on the Route 1 road that goes all around. A lot of people will go to Reykjavik and just hub and spoke, they call that, go out here for it and come back and go out here for a day and just kind of do the bottom of the island. But to do the whole island, I think you need at least 10 days.
So because Iceland Air, which is spread out to all kinds of different U.S. cities, we have another airline, WOW, I think it's serving Iceland. So and they frequently advertise, you know, take our air service to Europe and you can stop over in Iceland at no extra charge for 2 or 3 days. So if someone had that opportunity, would it be worth their while to take a couple of days? Would you be able to see enough of the island to be able to say that was time and money well spent? Because I know Iceland is very expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be worth it for sure. Mm-hmm. You got to spend at least 3 days, I think, and to be able to see. There's a lot of the stuff around Reykjavik that's close by that you could do that on day trips.
Okay.
Scott, you mentioned, and Marky brought it up too, and we've seen it in the news, that Iceland has become a very, very popular destination. And with that being said, and here again, a small population of the country itself, are you finding that you're bumping into more tourists over there than you actually are locals? How's that working out?
Well, my opinion is it's just the countryside's so sparse. They don't even have a train anywhere in the country at all, because everybody lives around the Reykjavik area. So there's not enough hotel rooms once you get outside of that. And I think that's what the problem is, because everybody wants to come in the summer when the temperatures are the best and the weather's the best. So you get all these people coming, and I don't think there's enough hotel rooms outside of the major city.
We had a news item, I remember, on the Travel Guys late last summer about things were so overcrowded in Iceland that tourists were knocking on people's doors and saying, you know, can I stay with you? Scott, I know that you are taking a group this summer. It's a small group of about 25 people. So how are you mitigating this issue of are our people going to get over there and say, wow, there's just people everywhere? Or is there a way to get away from that? And what are you going to see when you go to Iceland?
Yeah, once you get outside of Reykjavik, it's not going to be that crowded because of the how the.
It's just a matter of lack of facilities, which is causing this overcrowding.
Sure, so we're doing what I said is like a 10-day trip that circles the whole island. A couple of the highlights I think would be the Westman Islands, where we do a flight that goes over to these islands. And in 1973, they had a volcanic eruption that buried half the town, and still there are buildings there that are half buried in lava. And we'll do a tour on the island with some free time in the harbor. And then
So you're going to an island off an island.
And then we will board a boat and do a trip around the island to some sea caves and see all the birds. They have 8 million puffins that come there every summer, the colorful birds.
Uh-huh.
So you'll see puffins on the island, and we'll tour and see the house.
Did I hear you say something yesterday about how they eat puffins?
They actually do eat puffins.
We're talking with Scott Angeletti. Scott is one of our road reporters, and we're talking about a trip to Iceland. Yes, Thomas?
I'm just going to say, Scott, have you ever had a puffin? And what's that? Is that like a quail?
You know, I have not tried it myself.
Poor little birds that people are eating. Well, I guess there's not, you know. Anyways, so you're taking a group over there. You're touring the entire island.
Right.
This is not an inexpensive proposition. When you go to Iceland, if you're planning on going to Iceland, or if you're planning on going to Greenland, they're checking those prices too, hold on to your wallet, because this is going to be more expensive than just about any other country. I would put it on a par with Africa, frankly. It's going to cost you $600-$800 a day, depending on the hotel that you stay in and how many meals are included in your package and things of that sort. Also, Scott, I know you've had issues with ground operators in Iceland, and the fact that it is crowded means that it's ever so important for people to work with reputable operators so that when they get there, their space is there waiting for them. And I know you have a good ground operator that you work with in Iceland.
Yeah, we've worked with them three times, so they're an excellent company and haven't had any problems before.
What would you say in closing, what would you say for somebody who's headed for Iceland or who's thinking about putting Iceland on their bucket list, why should they make sure that it gets on there?
Well, once again, I just think that the people are fabulous. They're a little different. And the landscape is just stunning. One of the other things I wanted to mention that we're going to do on our tour is they have the largest national park in Europe there and the largest glacier. They have a glacier that comes down and calves icebergs into a lagoon that goes out to the ocean. And we take a boat ride around all the glaciers and then go to the ocean after. And it's a black sand beach, another wonderful thing. So, yeah, black sand beach with icebergs along the beach is just unbelievable.
Something that you can't see just about anywhere. I know that you're a world traveler, Scott, and you love national parks and great outdoor places. So just the fact that this has become one of your favorite places, knowing how much you love the outdoors, it really is a ringing endorsement. You have some seats left on your trip, a couple, three maybe?
I think we have about five seats left. Another interesting thing with this, we had so many single travelers. We have 20 people on right now, and 17 are single travelers. So, you know, if you're you don't have to worry about if you're traveling alone, you'll probably make a friend and someone else.
You're not going to be traveling, too alone. Not an inexpensive trip by any means, but if you're thinking about going to Iceland, here's one possibility. Also, you can go to travelguysradio.com. You can find the link to the Sports Leisure Vacations trip. You can also find a link there to Iceland Tourism. So if you're thinking of creating a trip on your own, just one word to the wise, make very sure that your hotel reservations are absolutely confirmed, because there have been some issues with people getting to Iceland and finding out that they booked through a third-party agency. Heaven forbid you would do that after listening to the Travel Guys, but got there and found out that their rooms weren't available and there aren't a whole lot of places to walk people in Iceland. So that would be my words of wisdom. Scott, thank you very much for filling us in on Iceland today.
Thank you, Mark.
And again, go to travelguys.com with links to all that Scott's talked about.
And welcome back here to the Travel Guys. Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano with you here. Tom, did you get a chance to go to the website there and look at why tomato juice tastes better at 37,000 feet? I think it's just fascinating.
Yes, I did. And in fact, earlier in the week, I'm trying to remember where I first saw that story. Uh-huh. My wife and I had the TV on, and it came up, and we were fascinated from the moment they mentioned tomato juice on an airplane, and then they take you all the way through it, and they do a little mock study where they test it on the ground and at 37,000 feet and get people's reaction. And you know, I am a, and so is my wife, we don't buy tomato juice and drink it at home, almost never. But when we fly, and I think this may be a lot of people do this, they'll maybe have a Bloody Mary on the plane, but then if they don't want the alcohol, I always order a Snappy Tom, because that's the brand of tomato juice with some extra spices that they serve, and I love it. How about you?
Well, I'm kind of a spicy tomato juice guy too, so I get it. And this explains to you why, if you go to travelguysradio.com, you can click right on the video. You don't have to go anywhere else, and it'll explain to you why tomato juice tastes better at 37,000 feet, and maybe we'll reveal that next week. We'll tease you right now. Also, on a little bit more serious note, tomorrow is Martin Luther King Day, a celebration of a great American. And we have listed on the Travel Guys website, there is a link there. It says MLK Tribute. It's something that some children were involved with, and I think that you will really enjoy it if you go there and take a look at it. It's the kind of thing that you will send to your friends and stuff and get them to share with you. A little Martin Luther King tribute from the Travel Guys. Some TSA friendly snacks here. I had, Tom, a list, you know, for folks who travel with kids, or you got to be able to get through TSA with this stuff. So
I see,
you know, but you want something. A lot of stuff that's sold at the airport is, let's face it, not very healthy. So these are just some ideas. Your apples and peanut butter, good idea. I'm not a peanut butter guy, but you know, that's a good idea. Banana bread. Instead of bringing an actual banana, bring a couple slices of banana bread. Granola bars, of course. Popcorn. popcorn is a much healthier snack than a lot of the chips and stuff, and you could pop some popcorn at home and bring it in a bag and save yourself $5 at the airport. Then it talks about snack plates with cheese and deli meats and things like that, those little protein snacks, vegetables and hummus also. So anyway, some good snacks. There's a list of those. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you to Scott and the two Chrises for giving us a great program today. Gwen Duncan will be with us next week right here on The Travel Guys. We'll see you all. Dance like nobody's watching, and we'll see you next Sunday.
Bye for now.
Never has the time to turn around.